Alrighty, welcome back to another episode of Hot Hoops, the Hot Hoops Podcast. I'm your fearless host, Ernest EJ Christian, alongside my sidekick here, Dave Ramil. Dave, what's up, man?
Not much. I don't know about sidekick, though. I mean, you know, maybe another lesser hero, perhaps, but sidekick.
Stop it. You know, if I had a sound effect right now, I would, actually, I do have the effect somewhere on my computer. I would play the Price is Right effect right now.
I love that. All right,
it's actually somewhere in my computer. If I can find it, I'll play right now. Like right now.
Well, let's just move on and talk Heat basketball.
Yeah, it's been a great 8 out of 10 wins, 5 in a row, albeit a very weak schedule. But you know what? When they lost the games to bad teams early in the year, what were we saying? What the hell? We didn't get those wins, so we actually made up some ground from the early in the year, losing to the Minnesotas of the world and the Washingtons of the world and the Brooklyns of the world. So we made up some of that ground again.
Even the Warriors lost to the Lakers, right?
Exactly. It happens. Bad teams do beat great teams sometimes. It happens.
Sure. Yeah, so it's good that they were able to put these teams away. But by the same token, I'm looking to see how they compete against a little bit tougher competition.
Have you noticed, though, with Philadelphia, and I know they're terrible, they're the worst team in the league, and they've been the worst team in the league the last 2-3 years, but have you noticed that Philadelphia, this year especially, is giving the Heat problems?
I think they give everybody problems. I think, you know, say what you will about Sam Hinkie and ownership and the, you know, the process, whatever that might be. I know it seemed a little bit lost at times, and we don't want to spend too much time talking about Philly, but for Heat fans that want to disregard what they're doing there, they didn't realize that, or they realized that they didn't have a chance to compete, particularly when teams like Miami were as stocked as they were during the Big Three era. So for them, they were more than willing to take this much, much slower route, tanking, if you will, in order to acquire high draft picks and build a team that way. But the team that they currently have in place, while the draft picks haven't exactly panned out, mostly because of Joel Embiid's injury history, you know, the guys that they have there, while they might be fringe players in the NBA, they compete. They're not very good. The talent level surely isn't what we expect in South Florida, but they compete all the time. So you have to kind of tip your hat a little bit there, because the guys that are there, they're looking to make a paycheck just like the rest of us. They work very hard. They give it their all. And unfortunately, just don't have what it takes to win a high number of games, but they work every game. You know, nobody questions their ability to work. Their ability to shoot, maybe, or their ability to defend, fine. But they work hard every time. And, yeah, they've given Miami, who can get a little complacent at times, some trouble. And you know, we saw that in the most recent game, where all of a sudden this quick-paced Miami offense hit a major obstacle there. You know, they didn't have the same assist numbers that they usually have had. They didn't, you know, score a lot. They did break 100 points. But, you know, there was still some struggling there, and, you know, mostly due to Philadelphia's incredible effort.
Yeah, and like I said, I think, you know, you look at records, like, oh, they're terrible. But I watch a lot of Philadelphia games. I know this is not a Sixers podcast, but
sure,
they do fight. And I watch a few Sixers games this year, and they always hang around. They a lot of the, if you look at a lot of the losses, they lose like games in the fourth quarter. They're always in the game, just losing the fourth quarter. So,
right.
It wasn't too surprising actually to see Philadelphia compete Miami back to back on the home and home this weekend. But what has been your biggest takeaway so far from this the streak now?
I guess it's just the overall improved pace. I mean, there was a great post on it on Hot Hot Hoops. I'm sure everybody's read it. But they're scoring a lot more. They're passing the ball more frequently. They're getting more assists. I think they're three assists per game, which, you know, is just resulting from swinging the ball more. And you know, they're shooting at a higher percentage. They're rebounding more. I mean, they're just doing a lot of little things much better than they did earlier in the season. So I don't know that there's any one thing that I can put my finger on, but it's just an overall improved level of play. And that's something that you want to see with this particular team as they go through the season. They want to be building towards something with the playoffs just a few weeks away.
Yeah, and I'll say it again, and I think I mentioned it on the last podcast, which, by the way, we're not numbering anymore. We stopped numbering the podcast. So if you notice this podcast, it is the 21st episode, but it will not be acknowledged as such because I'm done. I just think numbering podcasts are kind of corny.
Sure, I agree with you. Corny,
you know, puts me in the box. I hate being put in the box. Sorry. back to real life again. Sorry. But the biggest beneficiaries of this high paced Heat offense. To me, I'll say it again. Obviously, Goran Dragic, the obvious number one, because Now he plays his game. This is what he came here for. He came to play his game, and this is his game. Fast pace, open court, the whole nine. But people forget, Luol Deng. You forget, Luol Deng's been here for a year and a half. And up to this point, it was very disappointing. But a lot of it wasn't his fault. I mean, we kept saying that. He was put in positions last year to play spots that he'd never played before. Played a stretch four, but playing in a situation where he was playing that Bosh role where he just sits in the corner waiting for the basketball to shoot three point shots. And that's not his game. He likes to slash and likes to cut. You know, that's why I love the Dragic trade originally, because of the fact that he's going to be able to create that. But we had, once again, the Heat had an issue early in the year of figuring out what kind of pace they want to do or create. And now we're at a point, I hate to say it. I mean, I don't want to necessarily blame the Chris Bosh injury, because there were signs of this going on even before the All-Star break. Remember, they had, prior to that San Antonio loss, they actually had won three in a row before that. So, and we saw some clues of them starting to pick up the pace a little bit, which was Spoh wants anyway. But Luol Deng now is in his element. He's in his element. I mean, and not only that, he's double-double almost every night now.
Yeah, we talked about this last time, but I mean, it bears repeating. He's still going to have inconsistent nights because, you know, he's still required to shoot from the perimeter and to knock those down with some regularity. When those games don't happen, I think that's part of the frustration from Heat Nation, where they've seen him have. Well, you know,
there's that words, those words again.
They've seen games from him where he has 25 points, and then the following night he goes for 6 or 7, and that's. You don't want that kind of inconsistency. So I think that's part of the frustration from them, the fans, that is. And you look at how he's playing now, though, and, you know, he's using his speed to get by bigger power forwards. He's still a very good defender. You know, he's a staunch defender at this point in his career. So maybe he's not able to handle the speed for small forwards, particularly younger wings. But now that he's a little bit slower, he still works hard. He's still earnest in his defense. And so I think that plays very well to his strengths, and he's able to defend power forward. So he's still, you know, strong enough, and he can hang with those guys. And he's just using his quickness to get good scoring ability opportunities. So I think it's been a great turnaround for him. Unfortunately, you know, losing Chris Bosh is what, you know, necessitated the insertion of Luol Deng into the power forward spot. But, you know, you look back to a few years ago, when Bosh got hurt in the playoffs, and that's what necessitated Shane Battier's insertion into the starting lineup, and that was the lineup that was able to secure a championship in 2012, again in 2013, and that was partly why small ball was so effective here during the Big Three era, was because of, you know, an opportunity that came about due to Chris Bosh's injury. He was placed at center when he finally did come back, and the team was able to thrive. So I think that's what we're looking at right now.
Well, I hate to have this topic, but I had to bring it up anyway. This has been brought up a couple times. Whispers at first, but now with his winning streak reaching 5 and winning 8 last 10 games, and now they're ascending to the top of the Eastern Conference, actually right now half game behind Boston, there has been that little bit of that question out there, that elf in the room question, the last week or so, as to whether this team is better without Chris Bosh. And obviously the knee-jerk answer is going to be no, of course not. How you replace 19 points a game and 8 boards a game, you know, and his leadership and what he does on the court, his intangibles. But then you look at some of the numbers here, some of the numbers about pace and what's going on here. Like, there's a piece here, you mentioned an article that came out on hoops.com that Leonard Krikus actually wrote, looking at scores about speed according to sports food statistics and about who's fastest and who's not, you know, in terms of overall play. And Chris Bosh was ranked last on the roster in terms of speed, actually even behind Udonis Haslem.
Yeah, that's pretty surprising.
You know, but which I don't know if that is, are these numbers fair and unfair? I don't know. Like, look, I'm going to be honest with you guys. I am not an analytics guy. I respect analytics, but at the end of the day, I'm still Mr. Eye Test guy. To me, my eyes, I'm a smart guy. Not trying to sound cocky, but I'm a smart guy. I can see what's good, what's bad. And I, even though these numbers might actually make the argument that Chris Bosh might be an albatross, I will never, ever believe that in my mind. Is this team better off Bosh?
Absolutely not.
Okay.
Absolutely not. I think, you know, the numbers, I am not also, I'll say I'm not as adept at analytics as there as others out there in basketball Twitter. There are some amazing writers that do an excellent job of breaking down numbers. And I think all of them will attest to this very simple fact, is that the numbers tell part of the story. You see something and you want to have numbers back that up. I think a lot of Heat fans, and maybe it's a growing phase now, I think, you know, people are starting to realize how the numbers work. I think a big portion of Heat fans might be a little resistant to incorporate numbers in their assessment of this team, and that's fine. You know, it's a slow process for some people, but at the same time, it is for me. As a writer, I don't necessarily rely on numbers as heavily as some others do, but I think when you look at these numbers, they're a useful tool in trying to figure out some things that you see in the offense. And maybe when it comes to Chris, he holds the ball a little bit, but I think that partly is due to the fact that he's looking for opportunities when he posts, you know, when he's positioned at the high post and he's looking for cutters along the basket, or he's asked to do a lot of one-on-one work, or when he backs down an opponent or he gets by a defender, etc. So when you're talking about the overall speed, the number shows that he's a little bit slower, but that's only because it takes him a little longer maybe to initiate the offense. Given a faster-paced offense, I think he would continue to flourish. I think it wouldn't be a problem. And look, if we look at a guy like Amara Stoudemire, who at this point in his career is clearly slower physically than Chris Bosh is, I think it would, you know, I think if you insert Chris Bosh in a starting lineup at center and move Stoudemire to the bench, Bosh would find a way to thrive. I mean, his ability to shoot the ball, his speed at the center position would be a great boost. There's no denying that this team would be much better with Chris Bosh in the lineup. So I want to refute that right away. All the different reports, they're ludicrous.
Yeah, and you got me. And then yesterday you told me Miami's own Uncle Luke, Luther Campbell, actually posted an article on the Miami New Times yesterday defending the idea that this team's better with Chris Bosh. And look, I want to knock the guy. And the guy, I mean Campbell, not Bosh, because Bosh is my guy. But I read this article, I'm like, okay, you're going to use a 10-game sample size to make an argument? And then look at the teams you played in these 10 games. No, I'm not diluting the Heat success here, but we did play Philly twice, Phoenix once, Chicago without half the best players on the court, banged up, you know, and all of a sudden now in just six games, Joe Johnson is the answer, and Bosh is no longer needed. I mean, this article, I read it, I'm like, okay, what are you trying to get here? I mean, are you just trying to get clicks? It bothers me that people still think like this, that after six, seven, eight games, oh, here's the answer to all problems, get rid of Bosh, hope you retire, have a nice life.
Yeah, I mean, look, I made the comparison yesterday, in fact, talking about this. But, you know, I think we saw a lot of that over there in Los Angeles as well when Blake Griffin went down. And I think the Clippers won 9 out of 10 right off the bat. I think, you know, it was something like that. They had a pretty good run there. And part of that was also due to the fact that they played some mediocre opponents. They were able to capitalize on some wins. They found a way to you know, cement games in the fourth quarter. They had clutch moments, et cetera. Does Blake Griffin's absence make the Clippers better? Of course not. I mean, Blake Griffin is an otherworldly talent, one of the best players in the league, almost an MVP candidate. So I think, you know, the same can be said about Chris Bosh. He's just too good a player. He can just do too much. You know, for all the good things that Miami can do without him in there, he's only going to make this team better. And we talked about this last time. There's a ceiling for this team that raises considerably when you have Chris Bosh in the lineup. So, I mean, it's ridiculous. Again, like your point, it's something easy to say when the team is winning that maybe you want to make an argument for clicks or whatever, you know, hot takes. I think it's ludicrous. I think any Heat fan worth their salt knows that that's not the case. So
I feel like you're not really a hot take kind of guy.
I am not. The more I get into writing about not just the Heat but other teams in general, the more I kind of develop an even keel perspective on teams in the NBA. I think a lot of fans, of which I'm certainly a Heat fan, and I will always be one, I think you have a certain appreciation and you want to jump to a conclusion right away. And some of that gets perceived as hot takes, you know, out there in basketball Twitter. I've learned to curb that a little bit because, you know, I can be pretty hot-headed at times, but I've learned to temper that anger a little bit. And so
oh, really?
I,
no.
I think so. I think so. You know, I've learned to curb a little bit. Look, even in the recent talk about LeBron and everything else like that, I kind of just take it all with a grain of salt, man. You know, there's nothing you can do. Things are going to happen. People are going to say things. Even a noted drama, let's say queen, let's say, but let's say a person who likes stirring the pot a little bit, and LeBron James, you just don't react to it because you know it's going to happen, and it happened during the 4 years that he was here in Miami, and you just learn to appreciate the things that he can do rather than focus on the things that piss you off or whatever.
We'll get to LeBron later in this podcast.
Of course.
We're going to touch on LeBron and his not antics, but say, God.
The mysterious tweets, right?
Yeah, the subtweets. Speaking of Bosch, there have been some updates on Chris Bosch. He's been working out with the team. But from what I heard, he's working out with the team officials, not with the players. That's what I heard.
He's getting some work in with, like, coaching staff and development guys. Yeah, sure.
Right.
He's not running like 4-on-4 or full court or anything like that.
And then he also had mentioned also in another tweet that he's feeling good and his playlist is really. By the way, Chris Bosch, interesting guy, and I love music, obviously.
Sure.
His playlist very very diverse. I love his playlist. He had like Gavin Rosdiel on there and Black Keys and you know stuff I listen to, by the way, just for the record. But you know, like I said, interesting guy. I love Chris Bosch. He's not your typical, you know, superstar athlete in this league. His own drums.
Okay. I mean, that's drum. Perfect. But that's what makes anybody interesting. It's like you don't want to be typecast. You don't want to be, you know, just some generic player or person or anything like that. You want to have diverse interests, and that's great. And I mean, I think he pushes boundaries, and that's awesome. You know, he does things that make him happy rather than conform to somebody's limited view of what he should be as a person or player. So that's why I, at least on this podcast, and I think throughout most of, I'll say it again, Heat Nation, I think he's so greatly appreciated because of the way he does things. Yeah, he's quirky, funny.
Heat Nation. Well, you're singing. I thought you hated that. I thought you hated that last year. Now you're all good about that?
You know, I mean, like, I hated it when it was used in 2014 to rally the troops after LeBron left.
Defiance.
Yeah. It becomes a little corny at that point. That's one thing. I never liked it at that point. But now, if you want to say that you as a Heat fan base want to, you know, ascribe to a particular group or category, and Heat Nation happens to be the way you label that category, I'm fine with that. I'm telling you, man, this is a new, mellower version of Dave as I get older.
I like it. And I think also worth noting, too, that because of the disappointment last year, the topsy-turvy year that Heat had, it was kind of annoying to see that. We used to equate Heat Nation with that really bad year last season. I think that's why I get it. Trust me, I do get it. Cause it annoys me, too. Like, I'll hear, like, some of the guys who work for the organization, like Eric Reed and Tony F and all that, and they'll be on the radio doing some spots and stuff, and then, like, they'll say, you know, Heat Nation, you know, and I'm like, oh, God. Eric, I love you, but come on, enough of the Heat Nation.
Now, I will tell you, I'm a little tired of Seven Nation Army, though. I can't hear
That's okay. I mean, they, you know what it is, though? I'm glad they kept it because they made its own. Like, no one is doing it anymore. Like, I know the Ravens did in football for a little while, and it stopped. The Heat continue this, though. I mean,
well, I think that's part of the argument, right, is that they want to show with or without LeBron that it was something that they developed and they want to continue to incorporate it. They want to show that they can continue these things that they developed during the Big Three era, and that it wasn't necessarily limited to that time period that's now over. But, you know, I speak for a lot of fans in that sense, that you hear that song and you think of those great days during the Big Three era, and that time is gone. So it's kind of, for me, it would be better to move on. But I mean, I loved the song and I loved hearing it during those games that meant so much, and during the you know, those crazy playoff battles. But now that those times are gone, I kind of want to move on a little bit. Sorry.
It's okay. And like I said, we will get to LeBron in a second. I'm still teasing the LeBron segment of this podcast. But we saw a piece also went up about Dwayne Wade and whatnot. How happy are you about this idea of Wade wanting to fit in, like just letting the guys do their thing and he'll adapt? I think it shows great leadership. I think it shows like the thing that we all thought Kobe should did, you know, in his last years. You know, seeing what was going on with LeBron and the Cavs right now up in Ohio in terms of the instability, at least the perception-wise, to see Wade do this and know that they're playing better because of the space and him being able to adapt, I mean, that shows a lot of leadership there.
Now, two things. One, I think it's a little overstated because I think he's still doing very much the same things that he had done before. I mean, he holds the ball a little bit, he's bringing the ball up, but there has been some more diversity. We've seen Josh Richardson, we've seen Justice Winslow, we've even seen Deng bring the ball up on occasion, in addition to Goran Dragic and Wade. So you know they're going to handle the ball the majority of the time. But the fact that other players out there are able to bring the ball around and that Wade is doing more to create opportunities, he's always been a great creator. We've talked about this a number of times. You know, he's a hell of a playmaker and he'll always be one. But you know, there have been times there where he does kind of limit ball moving around and gets a little stuck with him. And you know, that's part of the privilege of being the all-star, you know, Hall of Fame player that he is. So I think a little bit is overstating it, but to that point, though, he has had to make some kind of a transition. Even if it's not a huge one, even if it's not a 180 or a quick turnaround from where he was in the past, he's had to make some adjustment, even a slight one. And that is more, to your point, than Kobe Bryant was willing to do. You know, and this is something that we've seen before from him. He made an adjustment during the Big Three era when he realized that LeBron dominating was going to be the path towards greatness. It worked out at that point in time. He's had to make the transition again now. He's realized he's part of a team. He can no longer dominate the same way he was. He can be effective in spots. He can still be really, really good. He just can't be as dominant as consistently as he was in his youth. And that's perfectly fine. And, you know, you see the way that Kobe's been over the last few years of his career, where he keeps taking shot after shot after shot, knowing those shots aren't going to fall in, and he can't accept his demise as a player. And you don't want to see that from your aging superstars. It's a difficult thing for us to watch. It's a difficult thing for them to accept. And so I do absolutely appreciate that he's made some adjustment. I won't go so far as to say that he's kind of blending in perfectly or anything like that, because that's ludicrous. But he has made an adjustment, and I do appreciate that as a fan.
And it benefits him in the end because he has the help. He has the help. He has to, even without Chris Bosh, getting Joe Johnson, he has the help, you know, and he could be that guy where he is, the closer.
You know, I listen to sometimes I listen to the opposing team broadcast on League Pass, you know,
Why do you
just
do
to
that
get,
for? Why do you do that for?
not because I like Eric or dislike Eric Reed and Tony Fiorentino. I want to get a different perspective. And you hear, not only do I want to hear how the other 29 broadcasting teams work in tandem with one another, but I want to hear a different perspective on the team that I follow, in this case, Miami. And so I want to hear these perspectives. So I was listening to the Philadelphia broadcast recently, and one of the things they brought up is exactly that, how a few years ago, Dwayne Wade had been this player who was limited by injury, and people thought his career was over. You had, you know, loudmouths like Charles Barkley talking about him retiring or that he should retire. Of course, now in retrospect, we see this, and it's absolutely crazy to even have thought that. But, you know, they recognized the transition that Wade has made and the fact that he's still able to be an effective player. And they pointed to, as we have before, the old man game, that he's not necessarily as explosive as he was in his youth because he had otherworld elite levels of athleticism. But he's using those old man skills. He's a lot more tricky. He's still using that incredible up fake, and he's effective. And that's the thing that matters the most at this point in his career, is still being a factory. If you're not going to be the dominant player that you once were, you still want to be a good one, and one that doesn't cost your team a victory. And that's the kind of player that Wade is nowadays.
Speaking of Charles Barkley, my second favorite athlete of all time in any sport after Magic, but he's lost his damn mind. He's a shock jock. He thinks the Warriors are not going to repeat this year.
I don't know what to make of him anymore, because you wanted to appreciate his honesty in a field where, you know, a lot of media types are speaking the party line and they never deviate from that kind of accepted talk. Now you have him being the exact opposite, where he's just saying anything just to create some sort of minor controversy. I don't take him
Yeah.
seriously anymore.
Like he said he hates Skip Bayless, but yet he's sounding more like Skip Bayless anyway.
Absolutely.
It's weird. I don't understand it.
It is the irony of who he's become. And, you know, maybe he just realized that that was the path to popularity. I don't know. I mean, he's been able to parlay.
Popularity, he's already there. What else needs to go? He's reached his zenith in terms of popularity. He's the most popular studio broadcaster in any sport. He is.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know.
I
And
mean,
the
that
fact that
again.
he's, the way he talks about teams, he's admitted he doesn't watch NBA games. He says, unless it's the, you know, Warriors Spurs, which I haven't even played this year, or the Warriors Thunder, you know, he doesn't watch these games. It's ridiculous. So he's talking about teams, and he doesn't have any clue what's going on anymore. And that's fine. You know, he wants to be a cantankerous old man. That's up to him. But, you know, you expect a little bit more. And that's the whole thing, too. When you look at Barkley, he's become an entertainer. He's no longer, or if he ever was, he's not a basketball analyst. He's just somebody who's going to speak loudly. He's going to make sure you hear his opinion. That's absolutely the case. Absolutely.
I mean, unless he does believe this kind of stuff. Unless he does believe that. I mean,
I don't think so. I think, you know, there's always, with Barkley, it's always kind of a wink, wink, nudge, nudge, where he's going to say something and do something completely different. I mean, he knew who he was, even as a player. He would talk a lot of smack, and he would try and create a controversy, but he knew what was going on. He knew always, you know, what he was doing out there. He was throwing elbows with Rodman. He was talking smack to Jordan, but at the same time, he was always playing his game. I mean, that was just the kind of guy he was.
I still missed Barkley's year one and year two. Barkley picking on the Heat fan base. The first year was actually when it was really, really the most. When he was picking on the Heat fan base, and the fans get all pissy, you know, and they come to the games and stuff, and he takes it in. At least he takes it. You know what I'm saying? At least he takes it.
Sure. Yeah.
So that's why I love him. He's the best, man. Last thing before I let you go. Well, that plus the preview. But LeBron. Okay, we teased enough. LeBron. What's up with all the bitchiness going on with LeBron? Like, he sounds like a petulant child. And I say that as a fan, okay? But these stupid subtweets, the Kyrie rumors, of course, Kevin Love, you know, all that, you know, and then they lose on Monday to the Grizzlies at home without Conley, Gasol, and Randolph. And lo and behold, Mario Chalmers is the reason they lose that game. Yeah. Of all guys. What the hell's going on LeBron first? What's going through his head, you think?
I think, first of all, no one's ever going to know exactly what's going on. I don't even think he knows. And this is not an indictment. Clearly, I'm not, you know, part of his inner circle or anything like that. But just, you know, having seen him over the course of the 4 years that he was here, there's always a lot going on in there. And I think there's a need for attention that he doesn't always get, or he tries to create some sort of drama in order to generate more and more attention. And I think there's, you know, that's part of the reason why these tweets are taking place. But there's also the fact that there might be some very real dysfunction taking place in that locker room. You see the guys there, the personalities there. I don't think it's as bad as people are saying. I don't think it's completely disharmonious where people are hating each other, that there's no chemistry, that they, you know, that they don't want to play together, that Kyrie Irving is leaving after this summer, et cetera. I just think it's not as fluid as it was during the Big Three era here in Miami. There was a harmony in place here when these guys got together as friends and as players, and they brought in great veterans that knew how to fit in. And, you know, part of the, maybe it's overstated, but again, the Heat culture, you know, there was something in place here, and it worked very well. I mean, that's not to say that everything was hunky-dory 100% of the time. You know, we hear nowadays that there was some strain there between Spoelstra and LeBron, that there was some strain there between Ray Allen and
Spoelstra. Dude, I told you that when the letter he wrote, he mentioned Riley, he mentioned, you know, players, he mentioned Arison. Spoelstra was not mentioned in that thing.
Yeah, I mean...
And that bothered me. I that really bothered me more than anything else, was that in the letter.
He knows what he's doing. He doesn't go about it as smooth or as polished as we'd like as people, you know. But I think he knows what he's doing, and he's always pressing those buttons. He knows that it's going to generate a certain amount of attention and things of that sort. And I think he's trying to stimulate these guys and find what works for them. You know, it's a lot of them as NBA players don't have a history of winning. You know, you look at the guys in that roster, they just don't know how to win. They've never won consistently. I'm trying to think, is there even anybody on that team right now who has won a championship other than LeBron?
James Jones, three!
Right. So if the one guy who has championship experience on that team is just basically your sidekick at that point, I mean, that's really what James Jones has become. Well, I won't go that far.
Hold his bags. Let's go to Bahamas.
But it's not a good look for him. And so I just think there's a lack of championship culture there from the organization and from the roster itself. So there is some issues at play there. Having said that, it doesn't really matter. This still, you know, we saw that during the Big Three era here in Miami. These guys, you know, and rightfully so, they don't care about the regular season. They shot off the blocks very well here. They got a great record. They're going to win the Eastern Conference. And even if they don't, they're still clearly the best team in the East.
Yep.
Miami, however, if they get Chris Bosh, like we said last time, I think they're going to be the strongest competition against them. You know, we talked about this in the last podcast. Toronto is a good team. You're a little bit more down on them than I am, but I think they can compete.
I'm down on them, though. I got to see it.
Sure.
Win me a series. Win me one series first, and I'll buy into you.
Okay. I mean, that's legitimate. I mean, I have to respect that, and they haven't been able to prove it. So we'll see what happens when the playoffs begin.
Win me a home game in the playoffs. Crying out loud. Jeez. Good God, Toronto. peers. I mean, the thing is, you know, Bosch and Wade were LeBron's peers.
Sure.
So, Bosch, you know, Bosch, obviously he won a title in Toronto, but he's done things in Toronto to earn respect for LeBron. Dwayne Wade was already a champion before LeBron set foot here. Okay? He knows what it takes to win the highest level. So, LeBron is high maintenance. I've said it all along. LeBron James is high maintenance. And it takes certain personalities to deal with that in a mature way. Dwayne Wade and Chris Bosh are those guys that can deal with that kind of stuff. Chris Bosh is very secure in his way. He was willing and able to take a third role. Even after getting offers of other teams, Max offers of other teams in 2010, was willing to take a third wheel in Miami. Obviously, he's secure in who he is. Dwayne Wade gave the team to LeBron James after year one. I don't think Kyrie and Kevin Love are wired that way. At least not yet.
No, I think you're right. I mean, you look at the Wade Irving comparison. It's the one that's made the most often. You know, by the time that LeBron came here, Wade had already won a title. He'd already done enough to probably get himself into the Hall of Fame at that point, just through the first 7 years of his career.
Right.
So there was a comfort level there that Irving doesn't have. He's still trying to make his name, still trying to carve out his place in NBA lore. So he's very insecure in comparison to a guy like LeBron, who comes and dominates every facet of the organization. And then a guy like Love, I think he's willing to make the transition, but Chris Bosh talked about this last year, that he was going to be the one who's going to be challenged the most, because it's not easy to be the third guy, because you kind of have to fill in multiple roles there in order for the team to succeed. And he recognized, Chris Bosh did, having made that transition himself, that it was going to be very difficult for Kevin Love. I think he's capable and I think he's willing, but I think he's just not as versatile a player as Chris Bosh is. He's not nearly the competent perimeter defender or team defender that Bosh is. He's still a very good offensive player, but he's just put in a very bad place where he's not going to be able to succeed. And then all of a sudden, you look at him and whatever foibles he has, and you're going to pick on those and say, well, it's not Irving, it's not LeBron, clearly it's Kevin Love. And that just, I mean, it's a win, it's a lose-lose situation for him.
Okay, last topic of this podcast, looking ahead to the schedule, the next four games. I believe, I'm looking at it correctly, is that four of the next 6 days are going to be game days. First off, tonight in Milwaukee. Milwaukee's always giving the Heat trouble. They did that, worth noting, they did win the last time they played up there. So they have that going for them. Win or lose?
If I'm making a prediction, I think the streak ends tonight in Milwaukee.
Wow, you're that guy, huh?
Yeah, I'm realistic.
Curmudgeon Ramil.
No. I'm just realistic. I think you know, they've been playing with fire too much over this five-game losing streak. I mean, win streak. They beat the Knicks. They beat a bad Phoenix team. They beat the Sixers twice. I mean,
and
Milwaukee's
Bulls.
Yeah, and the Bulls. They're playing Milwaukee better. But again, even that Bulls team was missing Jimmy Butler. You know, demoralized Derrick Rose, Paul Gasol, who doesn't know why he signed there. I mean, that team was not the team that it was expected to challenge Cleveland for the Eastern Conference crown. I think Milwaukee's playing a little bit better, and their length has always been an issue. I'm looking for Giannis Antetokounmpo to have a big game the way he always does. Yeah, I did. I've been practicing that one.
I didn't say Greek freak. That's it. I'm good. I go home and clock out. Greek freak. That's it.
I think his length, you know, all of a sudden that's. If Miami's able to exploit matchups because of Joe Johnson and Luol Deng, they're the ones that are going to be able to dominate, I think, because of the length that Milwaukee has. You know, Chris Middleton is a great, really underrated player because I think he's playing in Milwaukee, so nobody cares. But he's a great player. He's had some big games and big moments against Miami, so I'm not confident that Miami can go there.
Last year.
I'm not confident that he can go up there and steal a win, though. I mean, I know they're projected to win, and they've been playing well lately, but I'm not confident.
I want to say a win just because to be different from you.
Okay.
I got to get some positivity in this podcast. I can have you curmudging this podcast say on Milwaukee loss, because the schedule is not getting easier after that, because the next two games are back-to-backs in Chicago, first off, Friday night. We don't know if Jimmy Butler's playing that game, by the way.
Right.
He's actually getting a second opinion on his knee. We saw about an hour ago coming on my cell phone. So the Bulls game, do the Heat win or lose in Chicago?
I'm saying a loss.
Curmudgeon Ramil again.
I actually think that they're gonna go 0-3 on this road trip. Sorry, man. I know it's like, look, I think Chicago's been historically a tough place for them to play. I know Dwayne Wade seems to have gotten whatever issues he had in facing the Bulls. But I think they're gonna be looking ahead a little bit to Toronto, and it's a back to back, so that's gonna be tricky for them. You know, I think Butler will be back, and he's going to inspire this team. And I think they're going to have a lot of they're going to be on an emotional high. They're going to ride that wave to a victory over Miami. Wow!
If Butler plays, maybe I say a loss. If Butler does not play, I say a win. They did beat Chicago in Chicago last time too. Worth noting, also, Dave.
I realize that. I mean, look, I hope. And I know that I've been dead wrong in the past. I hope that I will be again. So
let's hope that trend continues, then, for the sake of the Heat. Okay. All right, next game here. As I said, back-to-back, Saturday night in Toronto. Huge game. Possible, if the Heat get that 3 seed, possible second-round matchup.
Yeah, I've already said I think that Kyle Lowry, you know, will probably explode for a big game. Dragic can't contain him. He's been incredible. A lot of people don't. You know, don't follow him as closely in South Florida, perhaps, but he's, you know, in Toronto, he's been a huge player there and a major part of why they've had as much success as they've had this season and probably in the postseason. So I give them the odd. I think they can exploit their matchups, and I think they can probably dominate. I think that one will be the closest of the three, to be honest with you. I think it'll be a competitive game because I think Miami wants to be able to prove something, especially if they lose two in a row. So it should be a very good game, but I think Toronto will lose. Yeah, I mean Toronto will win rather.
I like the first answer. this is a loss. Toronto right now is head and shoulders better right now. I do think in the 7-game series they've been sorry, but this one game on a back-to-back too, also traveling, you're asking a lot there for the Heat. So what you're hoping for Heat fans is the Heat win 2 out of 3. If they win 2 out of 3, I'm taking that because Milwaukee should be a win, but like I said, there was an issue, matchup issues, of course. Chicago, you know, they're starting to get healthy somewhat, although Butler now we're not sure if he plays or not on Friday. And of course, Toronto's a tough game. So if you're a Heat fan, 2 out of 3 is what you're looking for.
Absolutely.
Okay. And on Monday's game back home, which we probably, I don't know if we do the podcast on Monday or not, but if we don't, the Denver Nuggets at home. That should be a win, right?
Absolutely. That one, they'll come back and pissed off after whatever games they may or may not lose during that 3-game road trip. They'll come back. They'll get that rest that they need at this point, and I think they'll be able to push forward. And, you know, in the meantime, I wouldn't – If there's going to be a comeback at all this season, I wouldn't put it past him to make a comeback on that Monday. Can you believe that? I mean, he's working out with a team. Why not? You know, if he's not, I know he's not going to travel with a team during the next few days. What if he comes back on Monday? What if Chris Bosh makes his triumphant comeback on that Monday and he plays for the team there? Can you imagine the emotional high they'll be riding? That would be amazing.
That'd be nice.
I know. I pulled that out of nowhere, and it's not like I have any sources or anything like that. But that would be amazing.
Sources say who you a Broussard now. Anyway, David Mill, where can everybody find you on all your work on Twitter, all that stuff?
Oh, they can always follow me on Twitter at DRamil13, and I've got a couple of great pieces. I've got one for Hot Hot Hoops coming up later on today on the rookie Josh Richardson, and really? I'll be writing for Hardwood Paroxysm on the Heat Knicks rivalry from as part of 90s week. So definitely check that out.
We should do a podcast that one day.
Oh yeah, absolutely. That sounds like a great off-season podcast.
Throwbacks Thursday podcast.
I love it.
Follow me on Twitter at EJChristopher7. Check out my other podcasts too, Ernest Speaking Podcast on iTunes on Stitcher Radio. Little plug there, of course. And my website, ErnestSpeaking.co. I think that's it. Oh, follow this podcast, of course. We're now on Stitcher Radio. Hot Hoops Podcast on Stitcher Radio, as well as iTunes. And I think we're done.
Yeah, keep leaving us comments, feedback. If you have any questions that you want us to answer in the next podcast, or if there's anything you liked or didn't, although I can't believe that you wouldn't like anything about the podcast, but if there is, please feel free to leave comments in the section there.
Although I will say, and I'll tease it now, we are thinking about doing another podcast once a week, once every 2 weeks, do a mailbag show. This is a podcast solely on questions you may have for us about the Heat and opinions and whatever you want to talk about. We may start doing shows like that just to have some interaction with you guys, of course. So
of course
we'll let you guys know what's going on. All right. So we're good. We're out. Go Heat.